Welcome to Start Writing. I'm Joe Bendosky. This week we are going to be doing a re-release of Set Pieces and Sequences. It was our 10th episode back when we were doing, I think, one a month. So it's a fairly old episode that I think a lot of people haven't heard, but a lot of really good information. We talk about what the difference is between a set piece and a sequence and how to build them. We even talk about like the page numbers that are used for optimal set pieces and sequences and how to build in hotspots. So it's a really good episode. Because of the holiday, Jay has been out of town, so we've been unable to record. We do have a current discussion completely researched and ready to go, but he's just been out of town, so we're going to do the re-release of this one. So I've gone through and I pulled out the old beginning and the old ending, and I'll do those new and fresh for you here. So we will have This Week in Critique. So I've been reading Dan Brown's Origins. And Dan Brown relies heavily on anticipatory moments. And what he does is he basically says, I'm going to tell you this thing. And then he ends the chapter and starts a different chapter somewhere else in the story. And then he'll circle back around and be like, and now I'm going to tell you this thing. And then he starts a chapter somewhere else and never answers it. And, I mean, that is the whole book, is these moments. Like, the first chapter, he's going to tell you this big scientific discovery, and you don't get it until the very last chapter. And the only reason you don't get it is he just simply chooses not to tell you. I actually, twice I stopped reading the book because I was just so frustrated with this. But there was one moment in particular that really bothered me. And so they're trying to decipher this code. It's a Dan Brown novel, as you'd expect. And they need this line of poetry. And they think that it's in this one book. And the book is instructed the museum to have it open to this specific page. And so he's like, it's got to be there. Otherwise, why would he have done all of this? So he goes and he looks at the book. And that page is a picture that the artist had painted instead of a poem. And there's probably two or three pages about what the picture's about, what it means and everything, and then the character's frustration about that. And then another character comes in. So that was Langdon's point of view, we're in there. And so Ambra is the name of the other character. She comes and points, she says, the reason it's open to this page, I think it's 162, is you can't display it without showing 163. And on page 163... is the very poem he was looking for. And as a reader, I was like, that is just so ridiculous that he would spend three pages frustrated that there was no poem on 162 when he could clearly see both pages side by side as soon as he looked at the book. And so for me, that was just he takes this anticipatory writing, I think, to just ridiculous sometimes, but that was just over the top for me. And I just thought it was really poorly done. The character could clearly see both pages open the minute he glanced at the book, and he would immediately have seen the poem on the opposite page. So that's just This Week in Critiques. I was really frustrated. You know, the way he has dragged out these moments throughout the whole book has just felt overdone, and this one was just over the top ridiculous. On to the discussion. This is Start Writing, and I am Joe Bendosky.
And I'm Jay Washburn.
And today we are going to be discussing in-depth set pieces. We covered them very brief in one of our Elements of Plot podcasts. We've mentioned them before, I know, in an interview. And in our interview with Cameron that is coming out this month, we also talked to him about it to get his perspective. But we're going to really dig in. We've got page numbers, examples from movies, a lot of ways to really explain this. Because as I've talked to a lot of writers, it's not something they're really familiar with. And it's a really powerful tool to just kind of keep pulling your reader through the novel so they don't set it down and walk away.
So, and I have to say that this was an idea I was slightly resistant to. I wasn't familiar with it before I met Joe. So, like, I hadn't read it in any of the, you know, books on the craft that I'd read or anything. But essentially, so Joe explained to me what a set piece is because I wasn't, like, quite up on the idea. But it's like a subplot, essentially. And I think this is helpful for someone that doesn't. Let me tell you what I think it is, and then you'll add in the details.
All right.
It's essentially a subplot, so like another question or problem or area in life that the hero is focused on, but it has a resolution that happens before the main climax of the story. So it's kind of a miniature story, miniature plot arc earlier on in the story that helps keep the reader moving along. How's that?
Perfect. So, yeah, it's a subplot that does not climax and resolve with the major plot of the story, just like Travis was saying. And the example I really like to use to help people understand that is think of a TV series, right? A dramatic TV series. You have the pilot, which is really, you know, the open, and then you've got, you know, 20 episodes to get you to the grand finale, which is the big climax of it. So when think about your novel, that's the climax, the grand finale. Well, between episode 1 and episode 20, you have got 15 hours of content to fill. And if it is all about that grand finale, then people are going to start to fade on the suspense and the thrill. And so they fill in these stories with these set pieces. Now, a television series, because it moves through content faster than a novel, is going to have a lot of set pieces. Sometimes one, sometimes two, or sometimes they'll take one that has carried over and they'll resolve it in the second one. So it's almost a two-part one, but then they'll start another one there. So like Lost is a great example. A lot of set pieces in Lost. And so usually they will have 5 or 6 set pieces going at a time. And so usually within one episode, they will resolve one of the existing set pieces. And then they'll bring up, you know, 1 or 2 more and just kind of keep pulling you forward. The set piece is not completely unrelated to the climax, right? It's, you know, but it does have its own climax and resolution outside of that grand climax. If we look at Harry Potter and Quidditch, we learn about his character there. And there's 2 very small events that take place where Voldemort, I don't remember the teacher's name, he's controlling the teacher, tries to kill Harry Potter during a Quidditch match. And in
it... Is it Snape?
It's not Snape. They think it's Snape.
Oh, yeah.
And so they're trying to stop... They're trying to stop Snape. And in it, they interrupt him.
Yeah.
Right? Like, right. I think one... So Voldemort is trying to kill Harry on the broom. And
is
every
it Quirrell?
What? Quirrell, yeah, Professor Quirrell is trying to kill Harry. He's controlled by Voldemort. He's trying to kill Harry, and Snape is trying to stop him. But Hermione and Ron see Snape, and they think he's doing it. And so Hermione sneaks over and she shoves Quirrell into Snape to stop him. But in doing so, she stops Quirrell, yeah. Right? But in that, we see an active person trying to do something to Harry Potter, that someone is taking an active role against him. And so that's when it first becomes revealed that, you know, there is someone doing something terrible at Hogwarts.
A way of thinking of this that is helpful for me is thinking of it as a set piece is raising a question and then driving the reader to find an answer.
Yeah.
And in a show like Lost, that can be a literal mystery, like a literal question that you want answered. So I'm trying to discover information. But I think it can also be more of a metaphorical question. So you have 2 characters maybe that are butting heads,
mm-hmm.
and the reader is wondering, how is this going to resolve? Is one character going to be dominant? You know, I like to think of it as a question and an answer, and you got to make the reader want that answer really bad, and that drives them to keep going.
These are two examples. So Lost, they have the hatch, which is the set piece I remember most from it. There are several others, like why are people disappearing, the smoke monster. There's a lot of set pieces in Lost. But a set piece that I'm going to point out that is, I guess, a subplot that is usually not a set piece is the will they, won't they of a romantic story. Because you're going to usually want that to climax and resolve with the major plot of the story. And so that contributes to that hotspot. So that is not a set piece, right? You'll have bits and pieces of it along the way, but it is not a set piece because it's definitely one of the bigger things you want contributing to that final hotspot within your story. Similar to the set piece is what we call the sequence. And the sequence is that subplot that's all contained. We don't break off and go into other things. So Quidditch, we first hear about it when Harry's getting fitted for a robe, right? He meets Malfoy and Malfoy mentions it to him. And then a little later, Harry asks Hagrid about it. And they see the Nimbus 2000. And then he's at Hogwarts and he rides his broom for the first time. And then he gets picked up for the Quidditch team. You know, and so the set piece for Quidditch begins on page 77 of Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. And it doesn't really have its climax until page 245. It spans almost the entire book, but it doesn't. It's not there at the final climax. By the time we get to the final climax, where Harry is fighting Voldemort to get the Sorcerer's Stone, Quidditch is no longer part of what's going on there. But it is one that spans the whole thing. But the Sorting Hat is a much smaller set piece, right?
Wait, so is it a sequence?
No, it's not. It's a set piece. So the Sorting Hat, we hear about it a couple chapters before, and then there's a couple discussions about the different houses, and then we get the Sorting Hat itself. And so it only spans about three chapters, and there's a bunch of other things going on during that. But then there is a chapter on the troll. A troll breaks into Hogwarts, and the entire chapter is about the troll breaking in, and that is the sequence.
We, it resolves.
All of it happens together. We don't break off into other storylines during a sequence. It's all self-contained. And so at the end of the troll, what happens is Hermione becomes friends with Harry and Ron, right? It's an essential part of the entire series and the story, but it's a result of that sequence. So it's still a part of the major story, but it is self-contained. We could take out the troll story and insert any other story that resolves in Hermione becoming friends with Harry and Ron, and it works because it's a sequence. You can take it out and insert another different little thing, and it works. So the whole point of all these set pieces and sequences is about maintaining the audience's attention. Hollywood has done its research. It's been making movies, and it has learned that movies are a multi-billion dollar business. And when anything makes that kind of money, they put a lot of money into research, into figuring out how to get the most for their money, how to make sure that their products work. Because these movies can make incredible amounts of money, but they also cost a lot to make. And so they're trying to optimize on their investments there. And in doing that, they have researched what is the optimal length of a narrative experience? What is the best length for a story told? And they came to the conclusion that it's 90 minutes. 90 minutes is the best length for a narrative, right? Now, movies will go longer than that and shorter than that. They give you a little bit of leeway there because it's hard to make sure everything is 90 minutes start to finish. You know, some directors are just saying, well, my vision is bigger than that. They've given people surveys and tested, you know, their how well they understood, comprehended, and remembered. And they said after 90 minutes, people's attention starts to wander. You know, they don't remember as much. They don't catch as much. You know, they don't follow as closely what's happening in the movie. And they start to enjoy the experience less. And if they're not paying full attention during your climax, if you haven't done something jarring to get their attention back, they just don't enjoy the movie that much, particularly the end, which is honestly the most important part to enjoy in a movie because that's the lasting emotion you take out of it. You know, they've done studies where they watch audiences as they watch movies. They say after 90 minutes, you can see them. They'll start to look around. They stretch more. They scratch more. They're less focused, you know.
That's interesting.
That 90-minute cutoff is there. And so the set piece is ideally to create that 90-minute narrative in a 20-hour novel, right? How do we create this optimal narrative experience in a story that is far bigger than that length? And so I did a few little bit of math here, and if you take, yeah,
take this up
real quick. If you take the average speed at which people read, right, take out the slow readers, take out the speed readers, the average reader can read 18,000 words in 90 minutes of reading at the average reading pace of an adult.
Wow, really?
Ideally, you want to make a set piece open and close in 18,000 words. Now, you can stagger them, right? And that's one of the ways you really help drag readers along. Like any good dramatic television show will have multiple set pieces happening at once. And so you're curious about what's going to happen here. You know, Lost, what's going to happen with the smoke monster? What's going to happen with the hatch? Why are people disappearing, right? We've got multiple set pieces going on dragging us back. And so even though they resolve one set piece, we still have this driving curiosity for the next set piece to pull us forward. But when you're reading a novel, you can look at that 18,000 words. Do I have a set piece that is opening and closing in 18,000 words? Because ideally, you want a strong hook in the set piece to keep them reading to the end of it, and then they get there, and so in their 90 minutes of reading, they've had this optimal narrative experience. And hopefully there's a few questions still in their mind that bring them back. of course, there's a big climax, but smaller things that they think they might get in the next chapter, right? And that's what's really effective about set pieces and sequences, is they are designed to keep the reader glued to the page. Because, yeah, the climax is 200 pages away, but I might know what's in that hatch next chapter, right? It might be in the next chapter. And I think one of my favorite authors...
I think that's a really good point, just knowing that it can be soon.
Yeah, and that's what the set piece is about. The climax, the resolution, the answer to your question could be in the next chapter. It could be...
No, you're not going to get the answer to the big question until the end.
You know you don't get the answer to the big question until the end, but you could get the answer to that little question in the next chapter. And maybe it's not there. Be like, well, it could be the next one, though. So, and then... So, and looking at that 18,000 word count, so let's say if you're looking at your set pieces and you realize, like, it's not going to happen. I don't have a set piece resolving in my 18,000 words. You can write a sequence. Maybe take the last 5,000 words and you write a sequence. So even though you don't have that, you know, that 90 minutes that's coming to that conclusion, again, you can walk away with that 90 minutes with that optimal emotional climax resolution, because there was that little sequence there, the troll sequence in Harry Potter, right? You got the question, you got the climax, you got the resolution, all in that last, you know, 5,000 words, because the author was like, I'm not going to reach my set piece goal here. There's too much to get there. But I can take this sequence and I can insert it right here so the reader can walk away being like, oh, that was a great read today. I'm excited to get back to that tomorrow, but I got work in the morning. I got to go to bed. You know?
So this is funny because, again, I resist this idea of a set piece, but I once wrote an essay called Plot as Fractal. It basically looked at like a story's primary plot arc. Mm. But then I said the same thing should happen in shorter segments and shorter segments inside of those shorter segments.
Right.
And I think really you can take it all the way down almost to the paragraph level, but at least like the scene level.
Right.
Where I really do think you need to set up a conflict at the beginning of the scene and, you know, drive that conflict to the end of the scene. So these are just like miniature plots all throughout the book, and they arc over each other. And
right.
Anyway, keep driving the reader.
Yeah, to keep driving that reader forward.
I think part of my hesitation on this is just it seems very mechanical to say, like, you know, that this set piece is this piece of the engine and it's doing this function. Whereas for me, I think of a story, I think, a little bit more organically. So, like, when you say Quidditch resolves itself within itself, I think of Quidditch as still driving to that main final climax in that it's building Harry's character, it's building up the characters of the villains, and it's ramping up the intrigue. Anyway, I just kind of think of it as more of a holistic thing, where it's harder in my mind to separate that and say, okay, this is a set piece and it's distinct from the rest of this narrative.
Mm.
Like for me, it's really ingrained and just woven.
Oh, see, because in my mind, like, Quidditch is removable, right? If we identify the essential parts of Quidditch, one, identify that there is someone at Hogwarts actively working against Harry. They think it's Snape. Right, they think Snape works for Voldemort.
Well, that's an interesting. Just to say that you could take it out.
So yeah, so I think you know you remove the essential elements and you can insert them into a entirely different functioning set piece. Right, you identify what are Harry's character traits that are revealed in Quidditch. Right, so we take Harry's traits and we take the plot elements that happen there and we remove Quidditch and we say maybe they just have a class where this happens instead. So I see Quidditch as a set piece, right? Because there are a few essential elements that occur, but otherwise it's removable. Now Quidditch plays a bigger role because in the trials to get the stone, Harry has to ride a broom and chase down one tiny little key among many, which his seeker training comes into play there.
Huh.
So we try to avoid talking about this too much before the podcast, and Travis and I have different views on the idea, so he's kind of reeling over there. He's trying to think of his comeback to fight me.
Please, stupor.
I guess essentially it just comes down to suspense. The example we talked about at one point was, it's a kid on his birthday, right? A kid he has his birthday. It's awesome, and he loves it. And the day after, he's just looking forward to the next one. You know, so excited about the next birthday. Like, I know kids, like, they start planning it, right? Day one, they start planning the next birthday. 2 weeks later, they are focused on something else. Like, it is too long to sustain suspense. And the same thing is often with the novel, right? So you get to the end of Act One, and you've set up the novel, and you begin the long descent to crisis and the end of Act Two. And this is the biggest act in the book, so this can span 15 hours, right? The suspense generated by Act One is often not sufficient to sustain that long road to Act Two. Mm-hmm. So we build in these set pieces to reignite suspense for something closer, right? Christmas, Halloween, closer holidays to hope for and envision, right? Fireworks on the 4th of July, right? And you can see kids, they attach on to the next closest holiday, right? And in, essentially you're trying to do the same thing with a reader. Be like, yeah, birthdays are great, but they're a long way off. But we got this other holiday, and it's coming up, and you can get excited about that.
Yeah, that's cool. Okay, I had another thought. If I hadn't had this discussion, and I just heard the word or the phrase set piece, I would assume that it had something to do with like a stage play. And that a set piece being like something you roll in for a certain scene, maybe there's a hearth with a gun on the wall above it or whatever.
Ah, I see what you're saying. Yeah, it's a little misleading that way, isn't it?
Well, no. Well, partially. So when you said you could take out Quidditch and book one still functions completely fine, it made me think about the setting and how that's attached to set piece. And at least in Quidditch, there's a lot of spectacle in the visual setting and where those events happen. And maybe set piece does have something to do with iconic settings that also help, drive. So you're talking about Lost and the manhole cover.
Right.
That there's something inside that, but it's locked. But there's a literal piece in the set. And that's like centered around the mystery.
I feel like you're digging too deep because the set piece doesn't necessarily have to have a piece of setting to trigger it, right?
Well, so when you're saying you could take out Quidditch, and I feel like the thing that you're taking out, if you're not taking out, I feel like what you're pulling out is that cool setting. That's what the book would lose, is that really cool setting.
It would. Quidditch is a really cool setting, and there's a lot of really cool things. There, you know, but
anyway, yeah,
you could replace it with something else that was really cool.
Is key.
So I just read Elantris this last weekend by Brandon Sanderson, and one of the set pieces is they have these little runes they can draw in the air, and it's only these people who've been taken by this blight who can do that, right? But that's not a setting piece, right? It's an action piece, so to speak. And so that's a set piece that resolves before the climax of the story, is they figure out how to get them to work.
Cool. So I would call that a subplot, though.
Yeah. A set piece is a subplot. Okay. But it's a subplot that climaxes and resolves before major climax of the story.
Okay.
Yeah, it is a subplot, right? So subplot's like the big banner, and this is a smaller heading under. Yeah, it's a type of subplot.
Another thing I thought of was George Martin. So when I write a story, and when J.K. Rowling writes a story, like, Quirrell gets nailed at the end of book one, and there's this major resolution to like to the plot that's been going on in that book. When you read George Martin, at least when I read George Martin, the narrative just keeps on winding. I feel like there's no major climactic event. And in a way, it's almost like he just layers all these set pieces that just kind of...
He layers a lot of set pieces, but if I remember correctly, every book ends with a major battle that is kind of a turning point in the war. You have the battle on the Blackwater, and Stannis loses, and so he's no longer a contender for the throne unless he can marshal another army. Then there's the big battle in the north, and Stannis dies.
But it's not nearly so tidy.
Yeah, it's not nearly so tidy. He rolls a lot of set pieces over into the next book. Yeah. He does.
And honestly, I can't even remember in the later books where one book ends and the next one begins.
I couldn't tell you that about any of the books. I read them all back to back.
He just read that. I think he ended them because they got too long, not because he reached a climax of a plot.
In an interview I saw him talking about, and that is what happened with one, is that he
I think 4 and 5.
Yeah, it was 4 and 5. Like it was one book, and it just got too big, so he just split the characters into two different books.
Now it's two massive books. It's not two books. It's two massive books. That used to be one.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like he doesn't have those climaxes, at least not in my mind.
So it's true, because there are so many set pieces, it doesn't feel like you've got a big climax at the end.
But they're so gripping.
They are. Well, and it's the set pieces. They grip you because it could resolve any time, right? I remember reading about like Brienne of Tarth and Jaime trying to find the Stark kids, right? She's got to bring them back, the Stark daughters. And every time I was like, they could find them now. They could find them now. No, never do.
Never. They're gonna die.
You know, not only that, but like. Like, the Stark kids have left King's Landing. It's like, what happens now? They're not even there, you know? Arya ran away, and then Sansa snuck away, so.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times he doesn't even resolve a set piece. Like, so it just kind of branches into two more and be like, oh, suddenly that resolution's not going to happen. What now? You know, and I think that is part of what makes his set pieces so gripping, is you're waiting, and then suddenly you're like, that resolution can't happen. We can't have that. How does it work out now? You know, and so he almost drags the set piece out by breaking it off into two new ones or three new ones.
Yeah. So cool. But
yeah.
That's a helpful illustration for me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, because, you know, Martin is known for his set pieces. Like, he's famous. And like you said, you know, the set pieces are so gripping and fascinating that often you don't even notice the big climax of any individual book, because there's just so many unresolved pieces dragging you on to the next. That's why we all want to strangle him, because he hasn't written his book yet. Like, what happens to these people? So, in fact, I mean, the TV show has moved beyond the books now, so... Yeah. So, I don't know. Like, are they going to be telling two different stories? What happens now?
I think they'll become significantly different.
I think so. Well, because they were already starting to diverge.
Yeah. So. Cool. Okay, well, how do we wrap this up?
So, I guess one of the last things I want to bring up here is, in my own mind, it's good, like, a sequence, either a sequence or a set piece, I recommend that you span a few chapters with it. And again, part of that is just giving that reader the feeling that they don't know when the end has come, so they have to just keep moving to the next chapter. Even if you make a sequence, I would say breaking it into two or three pieces is like chapter-wise, you know, to be a sequence, it still has to be just a continual piece. But again, it's creating that feeling in the reader to just the next chapter, you know, to just keep forcing them to keep reading, because, you know, like one of the things people talk about is just the minute a reader puts your book down, there's a chance they won't pick it up again.
Yeah.
You know, if they have to put it down because life demands them to do something else, they're coming back. But if they choose to put it down, you know, good chance you'll lose them.
Now, speaking of not putting down, that makes me think of Dan Brown, actually.
Really? I enjoyed his books, but I mean, I didn't feel glued to him. Like a Sanderson, I can't put a Sanderson down.
Oh, really? So I would be more glued to a Dan Brown.
Really?
Yeah. So. And I think, man, he does super short chapters. At the end of each one, he's just raising another question. And you're like, oh my goodness.
What are you reading right now? Or are you reading one right now?
No. Oh. I like Dan Brown. I think they're cheesy to a certain extent. And I think they're the exact same plot every time.
Oh, really?
But I still enjoy
it. Well, I like Dan Brown too. You know, I mean, I was okay with his work. I always have the issue that there's really no way to sort out his fact from his fiction.
Yeah.
You know, there's no way, because he does do a lot of research, but he also just makes a lot of stuff up just out of thin air. You know, and so I've always been, you know, I've always enjoyed his books, but I never, you know, would put him as his favorite. But then when I read The Inferno, I was like,
oh, really?
That's a masterpiece. Like, whoa, when I got to the end, I really felt like it was just incredible, really well written book when I got to the end of The Inferno.
That's cool.
So I didn't feel that way about any of his other books. So has he written anything since then? I don't think I've heard anything. That was a couple of years ago.
It's been a couple of years.
Yeah, it's been a while. In summary, set pieces help pull the reader along. They should climax and resolve before the major climax of the story. Stagger them so you've got multiple set pieces that are at play at the same time to kind of pull the reader forward. If you're writing shorter fiction, Cameron was mentioned, you know, his stories are shorter. If your book is 40,000 words, you're probably not going to squeeze a set piece in there. You know, there's just not enough room, you know. But if you're looking at, you know, 110,000 words, you probably should look at having a couple set pieces to help people with the middle. And as we mentioned, you know, the middle is where a lot of manuscripts get turned away, you know, in screenplays and in novels. That's a big moment of failure. If you've gotten your whole manuscript requested, then the middle is usually where writers are flopping based on our research. And so this is something to help keep that suspense, keep that reader glued to your pages as they move through the middle of the book when things do slow down a little bit. Based on that 90-minute Hollywood structure, the ideal set piece should set up and resolve within 18,000 words. You know, and again, stagger them through there. Sequence is very similar to the set piece, except it's not broken up. And insert those when, you know, if you can't squeeze in your set piece when in your 18,000 words, write a sequence and slip it in there so that 90 minute provides that optimal narrative experience, that walk away feel good that the movies try to give you. You know, that's what you're trying to do with your reader as well when you put a sequence in there. Be like, you can walk away from the book right in the aisle and feel really good about it and want to come back. Yeah, set pieces are not entirely independent of the main narrative. Usually you're going to be doing things like establishing character or, you know, it's a planning point, like Harry catching the snitch is a planning point so that when he has to catch the key, we know he can do that because he's caught the snitch, right? So there are still points of it that are related to that major climax, but it's not climaxing alongside with them. And I think that covers everything for our episode. We've been forgetting to do this a lot, so I'm going to kind of throw this on here. Our website is startwriting.space. We're going to start trying to get the show notes up on a blog site there, so you can kind of review them. Like in this episode, you can actually – we've detailed every page in which Quidditch is occurring throughout Harry Potter, so you can kind of see how that set piece evolves. We've also identified the pages and chapters of the troll occurring there. We're looking at releasing another blog piece where we've gone through and edited novels. And, you know, we don't pull out everything, but, you know, 5 or 10 pieces where we think the author has done a really good job or we feel like the author fell short and we'd recommend some changes there. And it gets into the smaller pieces of writing. These are line edits. So we look at the simple things like, you know, action beats versus tags and, you know, too many actors in a paragraph and just smaller stuff that would be really hard to do a whole episode on. But you can kind of see it there in the edit itself. So we're looking at that. If that would interest some of the listeners, shoot us an email. Let us know if that's something you'd like. I kind of compile it on my own just as a way of just kind of studying craft itself. But if it's something that would interest you, we can release that on a blog and you can kind of just look at it there.
And I can put in a plug for that. I think Joe's an excellent editor and he's taught me a lot. And I think, yeah, these could be really beneficial for you, and it'd be a nice, easy thing that you could share with friends that are also writers.
Yeah. So. All right. Thanks for listening. As always, we would love it if you would leave a review on iTunes or whatever platform it is that you listen to us. Feel free to write in if you have any questions or recommended topics for us to tackle. We have, I think, 2 discussions researched and ready to go, at which point both Jay and I are reading Lisa Crone's work, and so we're going to begin a series on her writing. So if you're familiar with it, that is what we're going to tackle next. She has a very different approach to craft than most standard books will approach, and that's part of the reason we really want to look at it, and we think she's got some really good ideas and very interesting approach to the craft. And again, you know, like any critique, you can take it with a grain of salt, be like, I like this piece, I don't. That's kind of how we all approach writing. And as always, thanks for listening. Oh, I did want to put in one more plug for Lon. So Lon, if you didn't hear in the other one, he's a guy in my writing group. He's getting ready to launch his first book. So as we sit down every week or every 2 weeks, we discuss what he's done, what he needs to improve on the things he's already done, and what next step has to do as he prepares for his book launch. So those are on the websites. They're just live videos of me talking through him and discussing with him the process. And it's just a little more of a hands-on approach if you're feeling a little lost and intimidated about your own book launch. So you can go ahead and check that out. There's a lot of information, and I kind of throw it at him really fast. So I imagine as we do more videos, there will be some repetition there. So check those out.